Siwal. A lot of the halachos in the next few sections are about davening, and so I'm going to really jump around a little bit, focus on the parts of davening that specifically pertain to women, just be skipping over a little bit, and maybe some pieces just seeing a little bit shorter. So last week we finished with learning about Kabbalah Shabbos, and now we're going to skip over Maariv, if that's okay, and we're going to jump to page 213, Shacharis of Shabbos, and specifically the topic of eating before Shacharis on Shabbos for men and women. We actually discussed, if I remember correctly, we discussed this together at earlier points, right? So this is going to be a very...
In the little room.
Where were we learning? We're learning in different
room?
Oh, downstairs. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Okay. So we're going to do a very brief review. We did a deep dive then. We're going to do a very brief review. Just see a couple of the sources. The background is that the background is like this. Generally speaking, we have a limitation, a prohibition against eating before davening. A person should not be eating before davening. There are exceptions, bless you. There are exceptions, and that is drinking water and drinking coffee, according to the modern poskim, even drinking a nice coffee. I think that we spoke about that, even like, the earliest poskim say you can have a black coffee. And then a later poskim says, well, nowadays everyone's drinking coffee and sugar, you can have coffee and sugar. And then Moshe Feinstein comes along and says, well, everyone's drinking coffee and sugar and milk nowadays, you can drink that. And probably if they're, you know, the modern poskim would say, and they have, and some have, like, okay, you can even get a frappuccino if you want. Okay, so whatever, the bottom line is, whatever your normal coffee is in the morning, that's fine. It's basically, that's your wake up. It's part of your wake up. It's not seen as a disgrace to God, like I'm taking care of my own personal needs. No, this is how I wake up. I wake up in the morning with a coffee. That's what you do. So whatever coffee is your normal morning coffee, totally fine. On Shabbos, it's doubly complicated because there's two things going on. One, water and... So one complication is that there's an obligation to make Kiddush before eating. Just like on Friday night, you can't eat, and when Shabbos starts, you can't eat anything until you make Kiddush. Similarly, Shabbos morning, there's an obligation to make Kiddush. The question which we're going to address today is, when does Kiddush start? When is the obligation for Kiddush start? Okay, and it's going to have its own unique application for women and, which we'll come back to. The other practical complication is that davening is quite long on Shabbos morning. Us Americans, my brother is here visiting from Israel. We started davening at 9 o'clock. He's like, I'm at home eating lunch at 9 o'clock. Lunch, I don't know, whatever, breakfast, whatever, 9 o'clock. They're having the Shuda Shabbos at 9 o'clock because they have like a chick-chock davening like they do every day. But for us Americans and many shuls, people are not getting home till 12, till 1, whatever it is. And so it's for many, it's not sufficient to have a cup of water, a cup of coffee. So we're going to do a brief overview of these halachos. Let's begin on page 213. Before I do so, bracha to Adonai, al-hinam al-chaylam shakal ni
amen.
Okay, kasab aruch eschaim. So the Beis Yosef is Rav Avadio, not Rav Avadio, excuse me, Rav Yosef Karo. He is Rav Yosef Karo. He is ultimately, he writes a commentary on one of the earliest books that codifies Jewish law in a very organized fashion. It was a book called The Tour. So Rav Yosef Karo went ahead and wrote a commentary on that called the Beis Yosef. And then a few years later, he went ahead and shortened his commentary into distilled, very succinct rulings, which is called the Shulchan Aruch, right? So the Beis Yosef is an earlier book, and whenever you want to understand something that is ruled on in the Shulchan Aruch, you can look back to the Beis Yosef, much longer, much more in depth, but you'll get the thought process behind his different rulings. So, says the Beis Yosef, Kasab Aruch Haschayim B'Shem Maharam, okay, he quotes earlier source, V'Zucharani Shereisi Kasab B'Sefer Echad, he writes, and I remember that I saw written in one book. You know, it's always fascinating when you see like a little bit of that humility. You know, usually they'll quote where they saw it. They said, I remember I saw in a sefer. I don't remember which sefer. Okay, it's nice to see like even Rav Yosef Karo doesn't remember which sefer he saw it in. I don't know. I find that very inspiring. Okay. Shematir lishtos afilu b'shabbos v'yamtov. That it is permitted to drink even on Shabbos and Yamtov. Lo mitzar m'nesh lo kiddush. And is not forbidden even though you did not make kiddush. Right, so he's saying that first thing in the morning, you are allowed to drink your regular water or coffee that you do on a regular day before davening, even though you didn't make kiddush. Why? And here's the key line: Mishum, because the kol shelo hispalel, as long as a person did not daven, akati lomati zman kiddush. The obligation, so to speak, the time for kiddush does not yet begin until we start davening, and therefore, before you daven, you're allowed to drink water. You're allowed to drink coffee. It's only once davening. So it's only once davening takes place. We'll see which part of davening. That's when the obligation for kiddush begins. So first thing in the morning, you want a cup of water. You want a coffee. Okay, no problem because there is no obligation to make kiddush. Whereas once the obligation for kiddush kicked in, it'd be forbidden to even have a cup of water until you made kiddush. Right? So that's what the Beis Yosef is saying. And if you look at source 39, this is how he rules. He says, in the Shulchan Aruch, Lishtos mayim baboker kodem tefila mutter, to drink water before davening on Shabbos is allowed. And again, not just water, but the same would be true for coffee. Mipnei shadayim lochal alav chovas kiddush, because there still is yet to be an obligation for kiddush. Bein b'chol uvein b'shabbos v'yamtiv. This is true for Shabbos or yamtiv or weekday, no problem. Okay, so far what we're learning is you wake up in the morning, Shabbos morning, you want to have a coffee, you want to have some water, no problem. Now, here's where it gets a little bit complicated, okay? So if you turn the page to page 214 and source 40, so this is the Isha Yisrael, this is Rav Neivert, and a very classic modern book which talks about tefillah, and he writes like this, Isha shirigila lisvalo tamid tefillah shacharis, a woman who is accustomed to always davening shacharis. Right, so if you recall from our earlier, way back when, I guess as Karen reminded us, downstairs, when we were downstairs before, while the room still existed, we learned some of the different obligations of tefillah. You know, women have a very different obligation for tefillah than men do, and they're varying, what I'd say, customs. You know, in other words, whereas a man has a very structured, particular obligation with women, there's a bit of a spectrum of views and therefore different practices that people have. So some women will daven shacharis every day. Some women will daven much, an abbreviated version of davening. You know, what we call like one request, one praise, you know, basically, and different, there are different versions of doing so. But so he begins first by saying, a woman who is accustomed to davening shacharis every day. O afilu, or even, mistapekes v'tfila kitzara. A woman who is, uses a shortened tefillah. She shevach, it's a praise, bakasha vehada, and a request, and a pray, and thanksgiving. Okay, so basically, whether it's a full-fledged davening every day or a shortened one, mutrla lishtos lifnei hatfila. Okay, it is forbidden. It is permitted to drink before davening. Rak esadvarim sheisbaru la'el. Okay, only the things which were mentioned earlier, meaning water, coffee, etc. Okay, so he said before she davens, you're allowed to drink, no problem, right? Ula achar tefila kitzara zu, but after this davening, even the short davening, bein imdaita lispalel acharkach, whether she plans on, lispalel acharkach is called tefila, whether she plans on continuing all of the davening, meaning, let's say she davened only a little bit of davening, and paused, right? So if I'll use my wife as an example, right? Her davening is never, if the kids are home, it's never like from, you know, whatever, from the beginning to the end. Yeah, there's a little bit here, take care of the kids, a little bit there, take care of this, a little bit there, take care of the kids, a little bit there, right? So let's say you davened a little bit, right? And then she plans on davening, or doesn't plan on davening, or she doesn't plan on continuing davening. Kivan sheyatzi dei tefila, chovat b'tefila zu, once she davened a little bit and fulfilled her obligation for davening, asura litom afilo mayim acha tekadesh. Now she is no longer able to eat until you make kiddush. So here's an interesting thing. Whereas for a man, meaning I wake up on Shabbos morning, I don't get to sleep in, I have little kiddos, so I wake up and I'll say brachos, I'll say birkas haTorah, whatever it is. I did not fulfill my obligation to daven, right? So after I do so, I still have an obligation to say Shemona Esrei, Shacharis, right? I didn't fulfill no obligation. So for me, I am allowed to drink, so I could say brachos and whatever, all the brachos before, and then I could drink water, have my coffee, my 3, 4, 5, whatever amount of coffee, whatever coffee it is, it's fine because I did not yet daven. For me, that's not yet davening, even though I said brachos. But for a woman, the Isha Yisrael is pointing out, a woman fulfills her technical obligation once she says more or less brachos, because what does brachos have? If you more or less say the brachos, there's included in brachos is some, you said moda'ani in the morning, you said a hodah, you said a thanksgiving, right? And then in brachos, you say, you have some requests and you have some praise in there. You're finished. Technically, a woman fulfills her obligation with saying brachos. Maybe even moda'ani, okay? But basically at that point, points out the Isha Yisrael, you would therefore have, once you fulfilled your obligation for davening, now you have an obligation for kiddush. With me? Yeah? So basically, the quotes, therefore, that which is the more, right, which makes sense. Then he says, Amnam, he says, however, gamo sumechas lahakyo lishtos gam achre tefila kitzara zu. If a woman were to go ahead and drink after the short tefila, yeshla ami lismoch, there is what to rely upon. Uvim yichun imdait lisval acherkach kol tefila shacharis. Certainly, if she plans on davening all of shacharis afterwards, then there's an argument to be made that for her, since this is her normal practice, whether it's normal during the week or normal during Shabbos, but it's her normal practice, she hasn't yet davened yet. Even though, from a technical perspective, did she fulfill her obligation with brachos? Yes, check. But since this woman is planning on continuing to daven, there's what to rely upon to say she hasn't davened yet in regards to Kiddush, and therefore there's what to rely upon. The ideal practice would be that a woman who does say brachos, so if it's before brachos, drink your water, drink your coffee, no problem. If you said brachos already, and I know many women who, before they even have their first coffee, will go out of the way to make sure to say brachos, which there is value in. It's actually a noble thing to do. I can't think straight before I have my coffee. So I have my coffee, then I say brachos. But for whatever, if you're able to, it is noble to say brachos before, but then you technically have this obligation for Kiddush, which is the first opinion, which is, I would say, is the more logical opinion. You've finished davening. Even if you plan on davening more, you've fulfilled your obligation. So if you recall what we discussed then, I believe what I suggested then was make Kiddush on your coffee. Make your Kiddush on coffee. Shabbos morning Kiddush does not need to be said on grape juice. It can be said on most drinks. Can't be said on water. It can be said on any drink that is mechubad, any honorable drink, any drink that would be served in like a normal setting. So you wouldn't say it on like soda is questionable. You certainly wouldn't say it on water. But a coffee or a tea, if that's what you're having in the morning, you say Kiddush on it. My wife says Kiddush on our coffee every Shabbos morning. And that's it. And then so she says brachos, says Kiddush on our coffee, and good to go. Okay? Yes.
But isn't it better to make Kiddush on the grape juice?
It is better. Sorry, let me be clear. It is better. And if you want to have grape juice at whatever, 6, 7, 8, 9 in the morning, that's 100%. It would be ideal to make Kiddush on grape juice, 100%. I'm just pointing out for those who are not interested, not able.
What if I don't want to? Like, it's extra sugar.
Make it on coffee.
That's a good enough.
100%. 100%. Okay. The same way that many men rely on making Kiddush on a little schnapps, which is far, far, far more questionable because of the shear and whatever it is, and it's not grape juice, et cetera, et cetera. If you feel comfortable seeing people doing that, you could drink coffee, which is clearly minhag olam, where people are making Kiddush on a little chaim. 100% make a Kiddush on coffee. 100% for that reason. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I'm really bad, I generally don't do any davening.
Uh-huh.
So I should be doing some of the brachas, then do Kiddush, then we eat something.
Right. So in general, although a woman is not technically obligated to daven everything, but should just do something. So yeah, I'd encourage doing brachos, and then you'd have the decision. If you're going to say brachos first, then you should make Kiddush on your coffee. If you have a coffee in the morning, I don't know what you have in the morning. If you want, you can have the coffee first, and then you can say the Kiddush, and then you could say brachos afterwards, and you wouldn't have to make Kiddush. You could wait until Scott comes home and just make Kiddush then on.
I usually wait until he comes home and we do all that.
Okay, then. Ideally, it should be some davening a little bit. Some davening. It could be minimal to fulfill the obligation. Okay, good. Okay, one other caveat that's important to throw into this whole. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry.
You said you had to drink it within a certain amount of time.
Yes, I'm laying off the time. I'm sorry. Yeah, 7 minutes. There's different opinions. 5, 7 minutes. Yeah. But a Revias, not the whole thing. Depends how much of a coffee. A Revias. Yeah. A Revias. So a few, like 3.2 ounces or something. Not the whole thing. So, yeah. Okay. So just one important halacha when it comes to eating. So again, what we've discussed so far is the ideal thing to do for women is to say brachos, in which case you fulfilled your obligation for tefillah, and then if you want to eat at that point, say Kiddush over your coffee, or if you want grape juice, but over your coffee if you want, if that's easier, and you're good to go. The question is, let's say you don't want to start davening at home, you want to daven later, you want to go to shul, and you want to daven there. Cool, you could do that. But the problem is, for many people, to eat at midday is not so easy. It's not so easy to wait and push off eating for so many hours. Not so simple for everyone just to have some water or even a coffee. Some people want to eat some more. So there's an important halach. If you look at source 41, the Rama writes, V'chein ochlim umashkim l'refua umutar, that a person is allowed to eat and drink before davening for medical purposes. Okay. So what other poskim suggest and extrapolate from this Rama is that what's the Rama saying? The Rama is saying that I'm allowed to eat and drink before I daven if I'm not feeling well. Why? Because why can't I eat before I daven? Because it's seen as like disgraceful. It's not right. It's like I'm taking care of my own needs before I turn to God. There's something inappropriate about it. It's like the first thing I should do is focus on God. The challenge is that if a person's ill, then it's not like disrespectful. It's like I can't function, right? So there are those who are more makel, especially on Shabbos morning, to say that a person could go ahead and eat a little bit more. You know, shouldn't sit down for like a full-fledged meal, but to have some snacks or whatever it is before they go to shul and see it as an extension of refuah. Again, even a person who's healthy, but a person who would struggle to just make it through davening and be focused on davening all the way to the end, despite not eating, right? It's going to be hard for some people. And therefore, there are those who are, you know, are more lenient where you could eat a little bit more. So here it gets flipped back. So for a man, for a woman, it's much easier, right? What I would recommend, if you're going to eat more, what I would certainly recommend is say brachos, make kiddush on whatever you want, and then eat. And you're 100% fine. For men, this is a little bit more of a stretch. So for men, it'd be more ideal to say some brachos. They wouldn't say kiddush, right? They wouldn't say kiddush because they haven't fulfilled their obligation for tefillah yet. And then they would rely on these more lenient views, but they should specifically dive in a little bit first to, as a way of showing that they're connecting to God first, and then, you know, whatever they could eat without saying kiddush, and they would be able to eat a little bit. Again, so I guess I'm going to summarize. If you are someone, so we got three stages. Men and women, if you want to eat, if you want to have a cup of water or coffee in the morning, you could do so, no problem, right? You could do so without making kiddush. You could just do so, whatever. The first thing you do before you daven, no problem, okay? For men, I'm just going to go here because it's for men, if they want to eat a little bit more on Shabbos morning because it's hard to get through davening, so what would be ideal is to say brachos, so they've davened a little bit, and then they could eat. They can't say kiddush. They shouldn't say kiddush yet because since they haven't said Shmona Esrei yet for Shacharis, there's no obligation for kiddush. But they could eat relying on this Rama, an extension of this Rama. Women who want to eat a little bit more, what they should do is say brachos, make kiddush, eat, and it's 100%. Then you don't have this Rama to rely upon. It's 100% fine. You've davened already. You technically davened. You're going to daven later. That's not a problem, right? So you've davened by saying brachos. Then you could say kiddush. You could eat whatever you want and totally fine. Okay, yes.
So I never learned it. I just assume, because it's what I see all the time, people make kiddush and then they're like machbet to have mazonos. So, first of all, is that a thing? And second of all, does that mean that really you should have your piece of cake with your coffee when you make kiddush on the coffee?
Yes. So they're getting into beyond. So we're getting, I think in the next volume they get more into the laws of kiddush. Right. But yes, there is a principle of, sorry?
The rabbi said,
or you could eat melba toast. I don't know, whatever. But you should have mazonos. You should have mazonos. Yes, you should have some mazonos.
But that's really a thing.
I'm not without. We're gonna hopefully get to do a deep dive. But there's a notion of kiddush b'makom suda that for kiddush to really be kiddush, it has to be done in a place of a meal, like with a meal, with the context of a meal. And therefore, a person. It's important that a person has some mazonos. We're gonna see. There's some. It's going to take us, but yeah, but the notion of having the cake is not just like a fun thing, or again, toast or whatever, healthy, whatever, but it should be done in the context of kiddush.
And it should be a mazonos, not a shahakal.
It should be a mazonos, correct. Must be a mazonos, not a shahakal, yeah. Okay, let's turn the page. There are, again, there's more opinions about this, but this is, I think, the most straightforward path forward. Just going to see one source on page 216, just from the Torah over here. Page 216, the Torah writes, source 44, page 216. The Omrim, he's talking about now Shacharis. We're not going to go too deep of a dive into Shacharis, but I just want to see this one source. The Omrim Baruch Sha'amar Apsukit Zimra. Okay, so in the morning of Shabbos, we say Baruch Sha'amar, and we say Pesukim Zimra, V'noah again, and we have the custom, the Hosif Mizmarim, to add a number of chapters, right? I'm sure you've noticed that the Pesukim Zimra of Shabbos is much longer than Pesukim Zimra during the week, right? It's far longer. Why? Lefisha ein bo bitul melacha la'am. Because doing so doesn't prevent people from working. This is such a, I find this very beautiful, and that is that during the week, there's a notion of, you don't schlep. People have, you know, they have to get to work. So we daven, but people have whatever. They have to get to work. They have to do whatever they have to do. And therefore, we don't have an elongated davening. We make sure that davening is not so long. Right? Is there room to daven more? Of course. You know, one of the Amoraim writes, he says, like, you know, I should be able to daven all day. It'd be beautiful. We can talk to God all day. Yeah, but we also need to put food on the table. I need to do whatever we need to do. And therefore, davening during the week is shortened. But the Torah explains, why is it longer on Shabbos? We have time. We have time. Where are we running already? And since we don't have to work, there's no tircha de tzibura. There's no like stress on the congregation. And therefore, that's why it's a much longer davening on Shabbos. Okay, that's it. We're going to see for Shabbos davening. There's a couple of other changes, but let's get into Musaf, and specifically Musaf as it relates to women. So we're going to skip a bunch of pages. Yes, go ahead.
But I don't go through all the, should I really say more on Shabbos morning?
Again, so your obligation to daven technically is fulfilled at the much lower bar, you know, in terms of, so you can do what you want.
I mean, it's more ideal to say more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every missile, what's it called, Rig Shalev or something?
Yeah.
He tells you specifically which one of the,
there's a prioritization. Yeah. So if you're low on time,
and, you know,
no, but there's a priority.
There is a yeah. So there is. I think I sent it out once last time on this. I could try to put it on the chat again. It's a good. It's a great chart. It's a very very clear and easy to use chart. Yes.
Are we going to discuss, like, if a woman comes to shul, should she pretend like she's by herself if she's late, or should she follow along?
That is not here, but let's just talk about that briefly. The short answer is that that tefillah betzibur is, there's added value of tefillah betzibur, and tefillah betzibur is davening Shemona Esrei at the same time the congregation davening Shemona Esrei. So the short answer, again, there's more details here, but the short answer is that man or woman should focus on, should try to ensure that they're davening Shemona Esrei at the same time as the congregation. So not to daven completely on one's own. Like, the benefit of being in a tzibur, the benefit of davening in a shul, is that davening Shemona Esrei together at the same time. Ideally, what that means is starting at the same time. There are opinions that say as long as you're davening while at least some of the congregation is still davening Shemona Esrei, that's okay. There's a longer discussion about what you should skip to get there.
If you come after Shemona Esrei, do you catch up during Kriyas HaTorah?
Right. So we're going to get into Kriyas HaTorah a little bit more. Yeah, so we're going to get into Kriyas HaTorah more. But yeah, yes.
Yeah. I remember learning that Shacharit is a bigger obligation than Musaf.
Yes, yes.
So if you come in time so that it's cool that you can be saying Shemona Esrei when the congregation is saying Musaf, does it fulfill that
tefillah betzibur element?
Yeah. Are you doing that if you're saying Shacharit while they're saying Musaf?
Yeah, I the poskim speak about this in the context of like Mincha and Maariv. I don't remember what they say.
And anyway, you should stop for Kedusha.
No. But Shelly's saying, I come into the shul and I'm able to daven, my psukah dezimra, whatever, and get up to Shachar Shemona Esrei when the congregation's saying Musaf. The rabbi went on for a long time.
So in the middle of your Shemona Esrei for Shacharis, you should still, I was told, stop for the Kedusha.
No, forget Kedusha, meaning Shelly's saying, I'm starting at the same time. The silent Shemona Esrei. I'm able to start the silent Shemona Esrei. The congregation is davening Musaf silent Shemona Esrei, and you're up to Shachar silent Shemona Esrei. Does that fulfill your obligation of tefillah betzibur? And I don't know. I don't remember offhand. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I need to get back to you. They talk about it in the context of, they talk about the Musaf as well. Okay, I need to look into it. I need to look into it and get back to you. Okay, so does that answer your question? Sort of.
A little bit, because I guess I was taught differently, because you're not required, women are not required for tefillah betzibur, then maybe they should be dominant, if you're
going to care. There would be, but there would still be vet. Granted, you don't have the requirements, but you know what's the purpose of going to shul is for tefillah betzibur primarily. So once a person is going to shul, you're right in the sense you don't have to, but why would?
But to skip blocks.
Yeah, but there's also value, meaning you could also go back, meaning there's less of a need for that structure.
Okay.
So you could be able to go back in order to gain tefillah betzibur. I'm going to double check what Rav Nissel says about this, but it would be hard to believe, it would be hard to understand why a woman wouldn't skip around the same way a man would skip in order to gain tefillah betzibur. Even though you're right, there's no obligation, but...
She's not adding to the minyan.
Yeah, but tefillah betzibur is not about adding to the minyan, it's about taking advantage of a congregation davening together. I don't know. To me, it seems like straightforward that you should, but let me, two things to look into and hopefully get back to you all next week. Okay, so let's get into Musaf. Yes, there is a difference between Shacharit and Musaf. Let's skip all the way to page 234. It's a section of women and Musaf, okay? So let's see what the post can have to say. Okay. Okay. So says the Tzlach. Okay. This is a commentary on Brachos. He writes like this. He writes, "Lachein ani Omer. Therefore, I say, Shekivnu b'mashani mistapik im tefilas hamusafim no heges benashim shari he mitzvah shazman grama." Okay. So he says, this is what I'm uncertain about, because on the one hand, Musaf is something which is time-bound. We know that women are not obligated in time-bound mitzvos. V'afsha tefillah eimin haTorah rak midrabanan. And even though tefillah is not biblical, according to most commentators, tefillah is not biblical, the obligation for tefillah is not biblical, it's only rabbinic. Harila das, and so why is he saying that? And or he says, because harila das atosvos la'el daf chaf amabez gam mitzvos derabanan. Shazman grama nashim peturos. If you recall, he says, right, so we discussed this in an earlier context. When it comes to mitzvos derabanan, which are time-bound, women are also exempt from. Ela shebishabit tfila chayiv vinhu rabbanan. When it came to tfila specifically, even though it's time-bound, chayivinu rabbanan, the rabbis instituted an obligation on women as well. Kiman derachame ninhu, since it is something, it is a plea for mercy, kmavur la'el. Okay, so let's pause here just to summarize what he's saying. What he's saying is like this. We have a notion that women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. No obligation, right? So, shaking a little bit of an esrog, a woman is exempt from doing. A woman wants to, she could, but in terms of obligation, there is not an obligation to do so, okay? Then he's bothered a little bit. He says maybe there's a difference between biblical and rabbinic, and some do make that distinction, but he says no, even with rabbinic mitzvahs that are time-bound, women should be exempt. And therefore, Musaf, certainly a woman would be exempt from. But tefillah, when it came to prayer, the rabbi said, even though tefillah, prayer in general, forget Musaf for a second, chakras, mincha, marav, they're all time-bound. You have a time to have chakras, you have a time to have mincha, you have a time to have marav, right? So women should be exempt entirely, but the poskim speak about the fact, and the Gemara already speaks about the fact, that since there's something that's transcendent about tefillah. It's different. It's in a different category. Whereas everything else, women are exempt because it's time-bound. When it comes to tefillah, since I need it. I need God's sustenance. I need God to be looking out for me. I need God's help throughout the day. Rachameinu, that's the terminology the Gemara uses. It's a plea for mercy. It's this recognition that I can't survive. I'm dependent on a being beyond myself. And therefore, it's the exception to the time-bound mitzvos. So on the one hand, with tefillah, there's an obligation for women, right? But then he says, "V'ahainu b'shalosh tfilos hakvuos b'chal yom." This may only be for the three tfilos that are established during the day. Okay, he says, "V'afilu b'shabbos v'yom tov shem rak shavach." And however, even on Shabbos and Yom Tov, there could be an argument to be made that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, tefillah is different. Why? What's different about tefillah on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Because on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you skip all the bakashos, all the requests. And the whole reason the chazal or sages said that a woman is obligated to daven is because it's a plea for mercy. Well, what about tefillahs that don't have a plea for mercy? So really on Shabbos and Yom Tov, a woman should be exempt? He says, no. Kivan debechol rachameinu. Since during the week, shachris, mincha, mariv are a plea for mercy, lachein lo chilku bein Shabbos v'yom tov lechol. And therefore, the rabbis not distinguish. We never find anywhere the poskim say on Shabbos a woman is exempt. Why not? We have a general rule sometimes called lo plug. We like things being clean and organized, and we don't like making like exceptions here and there. And therefore, things are consistent across the board, and therefore there's no distinction made.
What's the literal translation of lo plug?
Lo plug, no differentiation. Okay, Kemasha Kas Rabbeinu Yonah Kan. Okay, Leinin Tashlumin B'Tfilas Shacharav. Fine, as Rabbeinu Yonah writes here. Then he says, "Val Tfilas Musaf." However, Tfilas Musaf Sheinena Rachami, which is never about compassion, or as we'll see, almost never about asking for mercy. Tfilas Musaf. If you look at the text of Musaf, what are we saying? We're talking about the karbanos. We're talking about the offerings that were brought. All right, Kemavur Rabbeinu Yonah Kan. Zilakach In Tashlumin V'Mitzvah Sasei Zirabanan Shazman Grama. So, A, it's not really a plea for mercy. B, it is a rabbinic mitzvah, which is time-bound. Vaday denashim peturos l'das atosos. Women certainly would be exempt from musaf. Okay, so basically, the Tzlach wants to say that women are exempt from musaf. Why? Because even though other tfilos really, there is an obligation of some sort because it's a plea. But he says, musaf, there is no obligation whatsoever because musaf is not about a plea for mercy whatsoever. Yes.
What about Rosh Hashanah?
Yes, you are... the post. Yeah. It's going to come up. Good question. Yeah. It's going to come up. Good. So let's see, before we get to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, which is radically different, right? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's full of bakashos, right? We're pleading, we're begging. So Musaf is like the high point of davening, full of bakashos. So we'll come back to that. But first, a little bit more, we're going to get a little bit more lumdus, a little bit more into the thought process behind some of these halachos. So here we have one more source which tries to bring another reason why women may be exempt from From Musaf. This is from Rabbi Akiva Eger in source 14. He says, "L'chora nira d'nashim b'turas mitzvilas Musaf." He says, "It appears to me that women are exempt from Musaf. Why? Kin kivan d'nashim lo hayu shoklos. Since women were not obligated to give the shekel, the half shekel. There was a tax on all Jews when the temple, when the Beis Hamikdash stood, that all Jews would give a half shekel." Okay, that obligation was only on, if you look at the psukim, on men between the ages of 20 and up, but it wasn't an obligation on women. And what was the usage of those half shekel, shkalim? It was used to buy the karbanos, the karbanit tzibur, the karbanos that were for the congregation. So therefore, ein lehem chaylek b'karbanos tzibur, therefore they don't have a portion in the congregational sacrifices, v'cheimashma, v'tshuvas, b'sam rosh, fine, and so too it is implicit from another commentator as well. So he says, another reason why women exempt, since women were not obligated to contribute towards the machtis ha-shekel, to the half-shekel, and that was used to buy the karban musaf, therefore women are exempt as well. Okay? As we'll see, that's not so clear. Okay, so let's see, if you look at Shut Ber Yitzchak on page 15. So again, this is a little bit, we'll get to practical law, but this gives you a little bit of the process and the thought process and the back and forth. So this is from a Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. He argues with Rabbi Akiva Eger. Okay, he makes, we'll see, a very valid argument. If you look at page 235, he says like this, V'ikr mashakasav agan hanal, the argument that Rabbi Akiva Eger wrote, D'nashim peturos mitzvilas musaf, lefisha halo hayu shoklos. Rabbi Akiva Eger wrote that women are exempt from being the karma musaf because they don't pay in to the half shekel, and therefore they're not connected to the karban. He says, lo nihirli. It does not appear to me. It doesn't seem correct to me. Why? Dimkein tiksha. Then we have a question. Lefi mai de'isa b'menachos. The Gemara in Menachos tells us, da'amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda ben Bukhri testified b'yavne. Okay. What is this room where he testified? So basically, what took place in Yavne? What was in Yavne? Remember? Sanhedrin was there as well, but also the study hall was there. Remember that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, right, when he was taken out at the time when the Romans besieged Jerusalem, right? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was taken out of Yerushalayim, in a whole dramatic scene, and basically he goes ahead and he tells, I don't remember. One of the Roman generals, he tells him, you're going to be emperor, and bottom line, a second later, becomes emperor. Fine, the Gemara tells the whole story and basically turns to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and says, okay, I'll grant you some wishes, right? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes ahead and he says, Tein li yavne v'chachameha. Allow the scholars to move out of Yerushalayim. You're going to, take down Yerushalayim. Allow the scholars to move to Yavne so that there'll be a continuation of studying Torah in Yavne. Okay, parenthetically, there's some interesting Gemaras, Rabbi Yochanan before he dies, with a lot of fear before he dies. Soloveitchik has like a beautiful piece where he says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was troubled that maybe he should have asked for more, right? Maybe he should have asked for leave. Ask for Yerushalayim, he asked for the Beis Hamikdash, and instead he asked for Yavne. Like imagine making such a weighty decision. Imagine you have like on the spot, he has this like choice to be made, and he, whatever. And he lives with that till the grave, like where he's not sure if he made the right decision. Anyway, it's a very powerful, chilling thought. Anyway, so basically in Yavne, what would happen is the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. There's a study hall there, and the rabbis are coming on and like rebuilding the Torah. They're starting to codify things, starting to write things down, starting to make sure that the laws that took place in the Beis Hamikdash are not forgotten. So people would come and say, I remember when the Beis Hamikdash stood, when we had a Sanhedrin, that this and this thing happened. And they would, so to speak, testify in front of the sages, and that would now become part of Jewish law, right? So basically, the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, and people are forgetting, what took place, what didn't take place. And so individuals would come forward and testify, stating, this is what happened, this is what didn't happen. And so that's what it means over here. That Rav Yehuda testified Rav Yehuda said that Ben Bukhri said in Yavne, Kol Kohen Sheshokel Eino Chote, that a Kohen who gives a half shekel is not a sinner. What does that mean? A Kohen who gives a half shekel is not a sinner. The implication is a priest, who gives a half shekel, a machzor shekel, is not sinning. Why is he saying that? Because, ki al pi din, because really, piturim heim ha-mishkalim. Right? We could infer from there, if he says he's not a sinner, that means, what do you mean he's not a sinner? That means that it's permitted. It's not necessarily, but it's not obligated, right? That means that we infer from there that kohanim were not obligated to bring the half shekel. Uchamochein levim. And not only were Kohanim exempt from giving the half shekel, Leviim were exempt. And also, as the Pasuk itself tells us, that it's Miben Estrim Shana Vamala. Only 20-year-olds bring the half shekel. So that means that all men, 13 to 19, would not bring to Peturim, they'd be exempt. So asks Rav Specter, Atu Kohanim Leviim Ukhtanim Pchusim Ben Chaf, Yiftur Memusaf? According to Rabbi Akiva Eger's line of reasoning, that means all Kohanim could go start Kiddush early, all Leviim could start Kiddush early, and all kids, all teenagers under 20 could start Kiddush early. Something's off over here, right? That can't be, right? That's his question on Rabbi Akiva Eger. Okay, so he says, after name of the Tanim Shani to Aslan Klachiyuva, find Im Kozet Tikshim Mekhanim Leviim, El Karkach Muchach Din Filas Amusav Talabishkalam Klal. He says it must be that the obligation for Musav is no relationship to the obligation of Shkalim. Just like we know Kohanim and Leviim are obligated, v'nashim chayavos, and therefore women are fully obligated in Musaf. V'chei muchach mistimas aposkim, and he says so too. It's implied from the silence of the poskim, literally the unqualified position of the poskim. V'nashim chayavos v'tfila. Whenever it says that women are obligated in davening, lo chilku be musaf l'sharei tfilos. They never say not Musaf. So he says the fact that the earlier poskim don't distinguish, and Rabbi Akiva Eger's whole premise, his main premise of the exemption, is the shkalim. He says, well, just like Kohanim, Leviim, and 13-year-old boys and 14-year-old boys, etc., are obligated, so too women are obligated. Okay, so we have machlokas over here. We have some saying they are exempt. It's a mitzvah aseis shezman grama, and it's not about mercy. That's the first opinion. Rabbi Akiva Eger is saying, well, it's connected to shkalim, and therefore they're exempt. And Rabbi Yitzchak Spector arguing that no, if it's about shkalim, they are chayav. And this whole notion that once we say that women are obligated in tefillah, why are we making these distinctions between musaf and shachris? Okay,
he's not addressing that it's not about mercy.
He's not in this piece. He's basically Rabbi Akiva Eger. He's just focusing on Rabbi Akiva Eger's approach. Yeah, the idea of mercy.
You could still say Rabbi Akiva Eger is wrong and that women are touching.
Correct. So. Correct. You could. Good.
So
excellent.
I'm not sure how he got to the.
So because he's only dealing with. He's writing this. He's living a little bit after the tzlach, but he's not dealing with the tzlachs. He's saying if Rabbi Akiva Eger's main focus is this, that can't be. Again, the tzlach you have to keep in mind is saying something very novel. The Gemara says women are obligated in tefillah because it's rachami. He's saying, well, tfilos that and Shabbos, we know that women are obligated, even though it's not compassion, right? It's not rachmi, it's not mercy. So he's creating this novel idea that since Musaf intrinsically is not about rachmi, they're about, not about compassion, not about mercy, therefore women are exempt. It's logical, but one can make a very strong counter argument and say, just like on Shabbos, women are obligated, and as Shelley points out, which we're going to get back to, not all Musafs are not rachmi, some Musafs are, right? So it's an argument that he's making.
I don't even think it's an argument that he needs to address.
Right? I don't know if he saw it. You have to keep in mind, like, we live in a world where we see, like, it's a cool thing, you know, we see everything. You know, you see the Achorim talking about things, they don't have access like we do. So I probably did, but I don't know for sure. Yes. Okay. Should we see one more source? Let's see one more source. And that is the Kilas Yaakov. Another, again, I know this is a little different than what we're doing. This is really why we've been doing this class, to get a little bit deeper into the back and forth. This is the Kilas Yaakov. This is known as the Stipler. He writes as follows. He says, L'nias da'iti akati efshel l'chalek me'kohanim l'viyim l'nashim. He says, maybe we should distinguish between kohanim l'viyim on the one hand and women on the other. Afa pdedved pter mishkalim. Even though it's true, Kohanim and Leviim and women are all exempt from the shekel or the half shekel. Denira de mitzvah sakravas karbanos at sibor. But it appears, he says, that the mitzvah of bringing karbanos, umitzvah shkalim, and the mitzvah shkalim trei in yanim heim, they're not as connected as you're making them out to be. Again, Rav Spector's whole point was to say that the two, or even Rav Akiva Eger's point was to say that they are connected. He says, maybe they're not as connected as you say they are. Dechiyuv akravas karbanos atzibur, because there's an obligation on the congregation. Ramya al kol atzibur, uvichlalam gam kohanim alavim. There is a collective obligation to bring karbanos. Ve'ilu yitzuyur, shashkalam inam aspikim lekarbanos atzibur. And let's get a scenario where there wasn't enough shkalim for the karbanos. Ve'yotzibur, meaning even after everyone gave their half shekel, there was a deficit. It happens, right? Ligbos the mitzvos or karbanos, and there'd be an obligation, and the congregation would have to go and collect more money for the karbanos. Still, there would be an obligation on Kohanim and on Levim. Del Kol Yisrael Ramichiv Akravas Karbanos Achova, because there is an obligation to bring Karbanos on the entire congregation. The Din Shkalim Inyan Acharhu. Whereas when it comes to Shkalim, it's a totally different thing. Shafilu Kishiyesh Belishka Maos Harbe Hamaspik L'chol Karbanos Hashana. Even when there is enough money in the treasury for Karbanos the entire year. There's still an obligation on every single person to give a half shekel. And regarding this obligation, the Torah exempts the Kohanim and Levim, that they don't have to pay in. Aval nashim, when it comes to women, shapri yeshlomar, you could say, just like they are exempt from shkalim, hanami b'turim ikra mitzvah d'akrevas ha-tamidim musafim, they are also technically exempt from the obligation to bring karbanos as well. Because karbanos in general are time bound, and therefore women are exempt from being karbanos. And therefore, I hope you follow. I don't know if that was, yeah, just to summarize what he's saying. He's saying like this. He's saying that maybe you can make a distinction between shkalim, giving shkalim, and karban tzibur. It is true, he says, that giving half a shekel is something which kohanim are exempt from. Okay, they don't have to pay in. But let's say you ran out of money for karbanos. There is still an obligation on the congregation to ensure that karbanos are brought. And if you were a Kohen who had $5 in his back pocket, you would be obligated to ensure the karbanos are brought, okay? Because there's a mitzvah on you as a part of the tzibur, as part of the congregation, to ensure the karbanos are brought, okay? So even though you're not obligated to pay in, you still be obligated to ensure that it happens. Whereas women, since it's a time-bound mitzvah, you don't have that obligation to pay in because it's a time-bound mitzvah, and therefore it's not on women. And therefore he argues that maybe it would come out that women would be completely exempt, whereas Kohanim and Levim, basically he's trying to defend Rabbi Akiva Eger. Right? I want to just be a little clearer. He's trying to defend Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger is basically saying, look, women are exempt from Machzis HaShekel, and therefore they're exempt from the Karban Musaf. Respector asks, wait, what are you talking about? Kohanim and Levim and children and 18-year-old boys are also exempt, and yet they have to daven Musaf. So he says, no, there's a difference. He says, Kohanim and Levim, while they are not obligated in half the shekel, they are obligated in karbanos. He says, women, it's true, are also not obligated in half shekel, but they should be exempt from karbanos since it's a time-bound mitzvah. And therefore, he is defending Rabbi Akiva Eger's position and saying, women are exempt from Musaf. Yes.
How does that concept even connect at all? Because the women are not performing the karbanot that are mitzvot asei shezman grama. So machzir shekel is not a mitzvot asei shezman grama. It just has to be done. And so how does this apply?
So what he's coming to say is that Rav Spector's question about Kohanim and Levim are also exempt from Shkalim, and yet they have an obligation to Musaf, whereas Rabbi Akiva Eger is saying women are exempt from Shkalim and are not obligated. How do you distinguish between those two? He says the way to distinguish is to say that since Kohanim and Levim, maybe it's true they're not obligated in the half shekel, but they are obligated to ensure that the karban is brought, because the karban, not the shekel, but the karban is a communal obligation. Okay, and therefore, Kohanim and Levim, while they may be exempt from the half shekel, they're still obligated to ensure that the karban is brought. Whereas women, they're not obligated in the half shekel, and they're also not obligated to ensure that the karbanos of the tzibur are brought. They could contribute on their own, but they don't have an obligation. That's the point. He's trying to basically point out that Rabbi Spector's question is saying, what are you, Rabbi Akiva Eger, talking about? Kohanim and Levim should be on the same boat. He says, no. He says, he's tweaking Rabbi Akiva Eger. He's saying, don't tell, Rabbi Akiva Eger wasn't really coming about the half shekel. Because it's true, Kohanim and Levim are exempt from there. But Kohanim and Levim are obligated to ensure karbanos are brought. Women are not obligated to ensure karbanos are brought. And therefore, back to that same position, women should be exempt from Musaf. Okay, so basically we have a machlokas, we have a debate, and that's what Mishnah Berurah. If you look at source 17, Mishnah Berurah rules, he says, Tfilas Musafin, Bitzlach Kasab Dipturos, the Tzlach wrote that women are exempt, Aval B'Magin Avram, the Magin Avram, right, Sefer, excuse me, Magin Giborim, Pasuk Dechayavos, he rules that they are obligated. Okay, so we are left with a machlokas as to whether or not women are obligated in Musaf. Again, This goes back to a broader discussion. There, the poskim say that in an ideal world, a woman should daven shacharis and mincha, not mara, but shacharis and mincha. There are many lenient positions which allow women to get, you know, to say much less and still fulfill their obligation. So if you're anyways only davening brachos, then I wouldn't do brachos and musaf. But if you're someone who's davening shacharis and mincha, then there's a debate as to whether you should also be davening musaf or not. Okay, the Yalka Yosef Ravadia takes a different approach. He says Nashim Peturos Mitzvahs Musafin Shoshabas Biyamatovim Brashi Chadashim. He says they're completely exempt. V'tov Shishmos Tefilah Mani Piyash Liach Sibor. He says, but they shall listen to the Chazan. Okay, why does he say that? Because this is Sephardic Psak. The Sephardim have a rule. Svardim have a rule when it comes to, let's say, lulav and esrog, right? Most Svardim have a rule that they will not say a bracha lulav and esrog, because they're not obligated to do so, right? And therefore, it would be a bracha levatala. If you'd ask Rav Avadi Yosef, if it was, you know, he's no longer living, but if you'd ask him, you'd ask a Sephardi posik, if a woman should say a bracha levatala, because in a mitzvah you say it's an avera. But she should take a levatala, maybe, but she shouldn't say a bracha, because how could she say a bracha? She's saying, Asher Kedishan Mitzvot Mitzivanu, you commanded us, you didn't command us. So the Sephardic general ruling is that women should not say brachos, especially say brachos around these things, because they're not obligated to do so. So similar, Avad Yosef says, a woman should not daven musaf, right? Because she shouldn't do it. Doing it, it's not only that she's exempt, it'd be problematic to do it, right? Right. So we have a whole spectrum of views over here. There are those who say she is mechuyevis. There are those who say she's obligated. There are those who say she's exempt, right? But even those who say she's exempt, as an Ashkenazi, right? You certainly could. Because we rule that yes, although women may not be obligated to do something, they are fully enjoined to say all the brachos, etc., etc. Whereas Rav Avadia would say she shouldn't, right? He says she should therefore listen to the chazan. He says mikol makom im ispalos musaf, if she does have musaf and limchos biyadam sheyesh la mamashis mochu. He says okay. Interestingly, he qualifies. He says there's what to rely upon. So don't tell someone off, there's what to rely upon. Okay, if Yesh Mishomer, and this goes back to the point that was made earlier by Shali, Shal Kolpanim Chayavos Lispal Musaf Shu Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, Mishom Derach Meininu, right? When it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there, since that the focus of those tefillos is all about asking, requesting things from God, it'd be no different than any other tefillah where we have requests, and therefore, although there are those who debate when it comes to Musaf on Shabbos, Yom Tov, Rosh Chodesh, when it comes to Rosh Yom Kippur, a woman should make every effort to daven Musaf as well. Okay. Questions? Thoughts? Okay, so again, just to summarize, it's not definitive. When it comes to Musaf, there are different opinions. Some say obligated, some say exempt, some say you shouldn't. Again, if you're Sephardic, maybe you shouldn't. Ask your local Sephardic Orthodox rabbi. But when it comes to, so there are different opinions, what to rely upon either way. When it comes to Rosh Yom Kippur, as we saw, much of the exemption revolves around, at least one opinion, the exemption revolves around the nature of Musaf, and therefore on Rosh Yom Kippur, where the nature of Musaf is one of requests, a woman should make every effort to daven Musaf. Okay, well, probably not start a new thing. We'll pick up next week.